Hello and welcome everyone. What a lovely audience we have here tonight. It is a great pleasure to welcome to New York Public Library tonight's acclaimed guests, artist and educator Nick Cave, and author and chief curator at Creative Time, Nato Thompson. We are here tonight to celebrate the publication of Epitome with a discussion and book signing. Nick Cave works between the visual and performing arts through a wide range of mediums, including sculpture, installation, sound, video, and performance. Epitome is the most comprehensive survey of the artist's work to date. It compiles his exuberant and genre-defying sound suits, performance work, and sculptural installations, and explores the transformative power of one's imagination and capacity for fantasy. This large-scale monograph also chronicles the artist's working process, inspirations, and his ingenious use of materials, which began with a sound suit constructed entirely from twigs. Epitome, with its dazzling images, captures the current of joyful energy that runs throughout Nick Cave's work and provides an illuminating critical context for his practice. I'd like to thank our guests for appearing in an Art Book Series event celebrating the essential beauty and importance of art publications with discussions and presentations by renowned artists, authors, critics, curators, gallerists, and historians. Copies of the book are available for purchase and signing right after the audience Q&A session at the end of the program. Also inviting you to visit the art collection at Mid-Manhattan Library, located at 455 Fifth Avenue, where you can freely and openly browse one of the largest and most comprehensive circulating collections of books and videos covering every aspect of sculpture, installation, sound, video, and performance art. We begin with screening of two videos and move on to the discussion. Thank you all for your attendance.
This year, we're celebrating 100 Hey. So we're gonna talk. You know, it's so funny. I think sometime we should just have a video of our whole talk, and then we just sit here.
We should have done that. I would have. Yeah. Or sit there.
Yeah, we could just kind of walk through. Anyways, I thought maybe we could start with Herd, since we worked on that together, and then we can talk about some other stuff. How many of you went to the actual show at Grand Central? Cool, that's a good number.
That's great.
Yeah. It seemed like all of you were there. We certainly got a crowd that we had no idea were coming, huh?
Yeah, definitely.
It was quite a thing. Talk to me about that. Because we got so involved in the process. But, I'm just thinking about, working in public for you, and we'll talk about that. But it was quite a thing to see how just energizing it was. I know that means a lot for you. You said the public is your biggest critic, but what was that like to see the public show up? New York's a big city.
Well, you know, I think that well, it's very complicated from the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, to think that we really didn't have, we had one afternoon to rehearse and put this piece together. And that was at the Avenelli studio.
Yeah.
So one evening, the following Monday morning was dress rehearsal.
Yeah.
So that was the first show. And prior to that, there was no place for storage, no place to put any of the sculptures. So we had to think about how could we sort of utilize the space where that the sculptures become sort of a permanent sort of installation. So we had to, so there was a lot of things that we just
didn't know.
But at the same time, it was very interesting to be able to sort of think quickly about ways that could support the idea. The fact that there was no dressing rooms, you know, I had to think quickly, what does this mean? So we have to dress out in the space in some form or another. So again, thinking about ways in which, you know, the dressing becomes part of the sort of daily ritual, which becomes the sort of initiative sort of start of the performance. And the most amazing thing about that moment was, you know, we're watching them get dressed, and the moment that they become a horse, everything before that, we completely forget.
Yeah.
And you know, for me, that was an experience that I didn't know that I would have, that I would literally, it was so convincing that you just completely, you had no idea when they became this object. So, you know, it was amazing for me.
Yeah.
That was amazing. You know, I got on the plane to fly here, and I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to go nuts.
Yeah.
You know, two performances a day for a week, I'm going to flip
out. Yeah.
Because I was just like, oh, my God, I don't know if I can handle it.
Yeah, sure.
But every day was like more amazing than the next.
Yeah.
On so many levels. I mean, after the end of the week, there were maybe about 30 people that came every day that I eventually sort of met and had conversations with. But, you know, the kids were, oh, my God. You know, that rope that was partitioning everyone off and they couldn't get to the horses and get in. They were, like, so crazy.
I know. No, I know.
The energy was like, oh, my God, they were, like, going to explode.
I know.
But it was, like, so fabulous to see that they just, the anticipation of wanting to sort of engage and be a part of this sort of experience was, you know, it really made me understand why I do what I do. That whole experience, it all sort of came full circle for me.
Well, you know, it's so funny. It's because when at first I was like, oh, my gosh, just 1 week? That's all we get? 1 week? We're going to do all this work for 1 week? And then by the time 1 week ended and we were dealing with logistics like stroller parking, we have a stroller crisis. They're clogging up Grand Central Station. I thought, oh, yeah, 1 week's plenty. You know, but also, too, you're right. Like, it was like the kids, there was just so much energy in the space. And it was also amazing, too, because it's so fun looking at the video of the fire chief, that guy. You know, just something about, you know, when you talk about broad publics with public art, you think of these amazing personalities. When, like, hearing him talk about your project is wonderful, isn't it?
Amazing.
I was loving that.
Well, that's the thing that was so, the beauty of it is that, you know, it's really how do you sort of bring it into Grand Central for, you know, this sort of venue where the common people sort of are constantly sort of moving in between. And so that's the beauty of it is that, you know, we took it out of this sort of gallery or museum setting, and it was really for the public at large. And you know, the adults were just as excited as the kids. So, you know, for me, it was really big. in terms of what I gained from that. I mean, we went in on the first day, and, you know, there was a lot more that was to happen in that space. And, you know, we were just told, you can't do this, you can't do this. It was just going down the list. And I was just deflating as they were just crossing shit off. Because I was just like, oh, my God, I'm so, like, irritated.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I have ideas and dreams and I must achieve them.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then I just had to calm down and realize, okay, this is what we have to work with and how can we sort of make this work.
You know, it's funny because starting with HERD is such an interesting space only because it's such a different project from your other sound suits in so much as it's a collective. The HERD is a HERD. There's all these horses. They're a group of them. It's not meant to be one horse. It literally is a HERD.
Right.
Which is different than your sound suits, because your sound suits, each one of them is crazy unique. They're their own, not that the horses aren't, but they're a group. How, you know, what is, and so there's a whole kind of conversation on groups and publicness. What were you thinking with the HERD thing? Why the group? The whole, as opposed to this, like, you know, like, and I just to say, slide wise.
As opposed to just one horse?
Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't be much of a show, right? But just to say, it's very different than these, you know.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, when I'm looking at performance, and so there's a different sort of sensibility and approach to materials. I mean, we've got to think about the sort of stress on material, the weight, the wear and tear. So it's a different sort of way of thinking in the studio. And, you know, Grand Central Station, I look at it as a public space. So, you know, I have to sort of do something large enough to where it has an impact visually.
Yeah.
And then the performance is then sort of brought into that. But it's really about, me sort of recognizing that it's a public space and that, you know, people are in transit, so they're moving constantly. What am I going to do to stop that motion?
Yeah. You know, it's so funny because, so I wrote an essay in the book. And, you know, sometimes you write essays and you're just like, I'm riffing on you, you know, I'm like kind of, and sometimes I think, like, I don't even know if Nick thinks this is true or not. I'm just kind of riding here. But, like, a lot of people reference, say, Mardi Gras Indians, Haitian flags as kind of sources of reference. And I thought, this would be a good space to ask you, like, did you go to parades when you were younger? Or did those make any impact on you? Or these kind of, like, mass spectacle events? Is there one in particular that stays with you? Or because these kind of fit within the kind of parade logic, particularly HERD or this kind
of... Yeah, I mean, I'm totally into parades even till today. Yeah. I'm in Chicago, so like I always go to the Thanksgiving Day parade every morning still.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's just the anticipation of just, you know, it just gets me crazy. I mean, yeah. And I think it's just the whole idea of just, you know, it's this collaboration of just, you know, people coming together to sort of create this sort of procession of wonderfulness as we are sort of spectators sort of enjoying that. So it's, you know, I was doing parades when I was 17.
What do you mean you were doing with them?
You know, I would sort of, you know, in undergraduate school, I would just make all these sort of wearable things. And, you know, I would gather 30 of my friends and we would just create these processions down through the city. So it's not like it wasn't something I wasn't used to.
It's just that,
you know, again, when the opportunity presents itself where I have, you know, a vision and then there's an organization such as Creative Time that will support that, then it's like, you know, I'm going to make it happen. And then in Lille, when we were in Lille, France, you know, in the book there's this irrational image of this yellow sort of...
I think I've got it here. Sorry, I'm going to go... I can go find it. We'll go find it. There he is.
Yeah, that. So that was sort of a fabric... You know, the image of this that the director of Lille 3000 saw was a image that Bob Faust, who designed the book, sort of had sort of collaged together, which he took part of a Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade and then this image, which was me jumping in a sound suit, and somehow made it look like I was in the parade.
Oh, really?
And so they saw it and was like, can we produce this? So I was like, what? And so that to me was like, you know, because yes, of course I would like to produce this, but, you know, it's just like, you know, I don't have the money to make this happen. Yeah. And so they made this happen, and it was like four stories tall. And all of that is raphia, so it moved as it was going down the center of the...
A big swoosher.
It was amazing. So I'm on camera on the news, and the parade is going by me, and I literally just was like shocked, stunned, in silence, because I couldn't really believe that I was looking at it and that it was happening. So something about, you know, walking into your dream is really sort of plays a very sort of critical part of my sort of thinking and the way that I sort of approach my work.
Let me just ask, I want to rewind a little bit, because I want to talk about you as a kid, just briefly here. You grew up in Missouri, youngest of...
No, not the youngest. No. Seven siblings, all boys.
Seven siblings, all boys. Mm-hmm. Quite a house. Your mom encouraged you in your artistic practice. You were the arty one?
Two of us, sorry.
Two of them. And because I was noticing that, you know, some of these sound suits are kind of nostalgic with material. They look like, I don't know, you know, I'm not much of an artist. I'm not an artist. But what I do, sometimes when I was in, like, elementary school, you know how you have to make a Halloween costume, but your parents didn't give you money to buy one? So you had to throw something together with stuff around the house?
Yeah. That's my house. Right. Well, I think, you know, when you grow, you know, you grow up with seven sort of boys, brothers, and, you know, you're all 1 year apart. So it's really a bit, you know, lovely. They're, like, amazing. We're, like, really close. But, you know, I, you know, get the hand-me-downs. And so, you know, I was not satisfied with that. That wasn't working for me.
Yeah.
So then I would just say, that's when I started to cut up and start to reassemble and turn it into something else that, you know, was more acceptable to me. And so that was really sort of the process of me sort of looking at materials and thinking of other ways in which things can be brought together and manipulating things and moving things around.
Because part of, you know, what's amazing to me is these pieces, there's a lot of domestic material, stuff that are very prosaic. You'd see around the house. But then there's, like, a lot of toys and animals.
But, you know, part of it's about preservation at the same time. It's like, you know, I think preservation around the craft of it.
Yeah.
You know, that these are sort of craft or sort of skills that are almost becoming isolated or non-existent anymore. So it's me sort of paying homage to that and sort of, again, looking at the sort of abundance of that that's out there that I can sort of take and sort of consider its role within the context of building a
Did you
surface.
Know you would always be going to art school, or were you like, I'm an artist. That's just, there's no other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was clear. Like, everyone in the family knew.
Everyone in the family knew I was weird, yeah.
You're doing processions down the block.
Definitely. Well, yeah, I think that, they all knew. I'm just happy that my, you know, parents, supported that and, you know, sort of encouraged that kind of energy to be sort of escalated in the way that it has.
And you went to the Kansas City Art Institute? Mm-hmm. How was that, going to that school? Was it nice to be around other artists?
It was amazing.
Yeah.
I was there with my brother, Jack.
Yeah. Did he go before you?
He's 1 year before me, but... it was amazing. I mean, we made things happen there. You know, we would create, you know, fashion-related events. We just did stuff constantly. But, you know, again, it provides a platform where you can sort of...
Be wild.
Be wild. But, you know, my mother didn't necessarily like it when I would come home to her office. And, you know, I would have, like, blue hair or something crazy. That was really, you know...
And
difficult for her, but
I read that you said that you saw Alvin Ailey perform Mm-hmm. Is this right? And then you decided to do a summer kind of residency program or something like
that? Yeah, well, I knew that they had a program that was at the University of Kansas, Kansas City, which was literally a block down the street. So that's when I started to, you know, think more about movement, uh-huh. bringing that to my work.
What about the performance struck you? Did it make a huge impression right away? Or?
Well, again, providing that sort of, you know, this sort of stage, the idea of being able to sort of, you know, move work from this sort of two-dimensional plane into this sort of three-dimensional sort of space and sort of bring movement around. That just provided another way in which it was sort of really sort of like a canvas. Uh-huh. I always look at it as, like when I did Grand Central Station, you know, we went in on that Monday to do the first dress rehearsal. You know, I'm thinking, wow, we've only had not even 48 hours to pull this together.
Yeah.
And I've got to, it has to be together.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know, you know, when you're working with dancers, it's very different. We get it in a second. We can pick it up you were there.
Yeah.
I mean, in 20 minutes, we all knew how to sort of, we knew the choreography of the piece. And so it's really just then sort of setting the stage.
Yeah.
And so, you know, setting the stage is really sort of like building a collage.
And so you always imagined the sound suits as movement. It was always movement oriented.
Yes and no.
Right.
I mean, it's like, you know, when I, you know, would go to the Museum of Natural History, I'm looking at these artifacts that are static, but yet they really sort of serve a purpose within a particular culture.
Yeah.
But I'm forced to look at them as this sort of art object. So
right.
I was interested in that sort of duality, that could it function as a sculptural object, and does it also have the ability to move into this performative sort of role?
Because it's funny, when I look at these, you know, it's just, and it's amazing too, because the range of your references, it's such a mashup of like historical, it's everywhere from drag culture to Haitian flags to like Japanime to like African tribal masks. I mean, your range, it's dizzying in the imagination. Like, it's like the Museum of Natural History of I don't know what.
Well, and I think that's really sort of how I sort of come at it. Yeah. I don't look at just one thing in terms of like research. I'm looking at everything, uh-huh. and then how does this all sort of collide in the center,
right.
And in terms of shapes? How do I sort of come to a shape? It sort of depends on what I'm thinking about. You know?
Well, let's just say this guy,
Bunny Boy.
Where'd Bunny come from?
Bunny Boy, I was just thinking about like those like marshmallow peats. So it's three of them. There's a pink one, yellow one, blue one.
Uh-huh.
And so then I'm working on this video right now where Bunny Boy, and his whole chest is bare. So he's hitchhiking.
Oh, this is nice.
And so then whoever picks up Bunny Boy, we then record.
What?
That's what we're doing right now.
Really?
So, yeah. So.
What do you mean? So you just send Bunny Boy into the wilderness?
We're just out on the streets.
Do you,
and
what?
So...
What city?
Chicago.
Really?
And so basically, so when we're videoing you, we only are videoing your mouth. And you've got three questions. You know, the first one being, why did you pick up Bunny Boy? And so, people are like so like freaked out about it.
Well, because he's kind of, I find Bunny Boy kind of scary.
Scary, but at the same time, very seductive, right? Look again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm just trying. I'm just thinking about, would I pick up Bunny Boy?
Would you?
No.
I'm trying to think.
Well, I wonder.
Would I?
I might circle Bunny Boy for a while.
Yeah, well, you know, you're thinking about it.
Yeah. Is he hitchhiking like this, or what's he doing?
Yeah.
I think John Waters did that project where he hitchhiked across the country, right? Do you know this?
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of recorded. It's funny because my best friend, Matt Littlejohn, is a roadie for bands, and they were like in the middle of Ohio, and they're like, that's John Waters on the freeway on ramp. They picked him up anyways, whatever. But that's, so you're actually working on that now. So Bunny mm-hmm. Boy is entering into the world, so kind of an intervention.
Yeah, and he's been in the world a little bit. There's a great video that I did.
Right, that's true too. He's entered into our stratosphere. Let's talk just briefly. I wanted to, not to get super political, but just a little bit. You're from Missouri. And I was just thinking about, you know, the kind of story you tell about the Rodney King riots mm-hmm. being the inspiration for your first sound suit made of twigs. But then I've been thinking about Ferguson, too, recently. And, like, not to be a bummer, but it's certainly on my mind a lot, right? I mean,
right.
it's on everyone's mind.
Right.
But
is it on my mind?
Is it on your mind?
Yeah, it's on my mind. You know, I just finished these three new works, TM13 series, which is Trayvon Martin.
Oh, really?
You know, so now we have, you know, Ferguson. So I'm not quite there yet what that sort of will be, but yeah, it's on my mind, of course.
It's so funny. I wanted to talk about your recent show. I wanted to talk about your recent show, Jack Shaman, towards the end, but it just seems like the right moment in some ways to go towards some of the newer work, because when we worked on Herd, you said to me, you know, I'll just have to skip ahead. You just never know which way the conversation will go. But you said to me, you know, I might not be, I'm not going to be doing these sound suits much longer. I'm going to be moving towards different kinds of sculpture. But then I didn't realize, too, they'd be such racially charged sculpture. Can you talk about what moved you in that direction, or what was the...
Well, I think it's always been there in the work.
I know that.
It's me sort of like coming out of hiding. You know, it's like, it's always been the sound suits.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that, you know, I sort of made the choice of, you know, sort of putting that more in the background and sort of thinking of ways in which, how can I sort of bring you into the work. But this new work, it's really me sort of like, sort of, you know, basically saying, and just sort of, you know, sort of dissecting the sound suit. So this is what it is right now. So the next 4 years, it could be, you know, based on homoeroticness in some capacity. I'm not sure, but I'm thinking about. So it's you know, there's multiple sort of ideas and directions that feed into that work. And it's me sort of now sort of backtracking.
It's interesting. I want to show some of the images so the audience can. Oh, right, I can point it this way. That's right. You got your.
And so basically what, you know, what happened is that I was flea marketing, and I just happened to find this object here, this bus, and the lid comes off.
Okay.
And so, you know, I grab it off the shelf, and it says Spittoon. So I, like, flipped the fuck out when I heard it, because I was like, are you kidding me?
Right.
And so that just sort of sent me on this sort of, like, frenzy to travel around the country to find the most oppressive, despairing, humiliating sort of object that I could find. So basically that was the sort of how the sort of body of work really started to form itself.
When was that roughly did you?
Maybe a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
And so basically that's really sort of was the beginning of me sort of.
Here, we'll go back to it.
Bringing this work. And again, sort of, you know, maintaining and being very true to, the, you know, the found object and this hard notion of collecting and borrowing and sort of shifting meaning and sort of, you know, the replacement of something. And
it's interesting, too, because you said that, just thinking about it, because you've often said this, but the sound suits in many ways aren't just like a projection outside, but they're also a protection inside for the viewer, because no one knows who's. And so, you know, it's true, the politics of race and class and sexuality, they're all in the sound suits.
Right.
But not as overtly, I would say, as this particular. Can you kind of think of it as a different kind of. What was it? Was it the finding the spittoon, or were you kind of just ready to.
Well, I'm thinking about a shift anyway, and not sure what that would be. And, you know, it's always been the object that sort of becomes the instigator for me.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like that's what, you know, provokes how I'm thinking and sort of designing or making. And so it's that kind of thing that I was interested in transferring over into this new way of thinking. But it's really, at the end of the day, it comes down to the essence. How do I sort of transfer the essence of my work into this new body of work? You know, how does it still read as Nick Cave and
you know? I think it's extremely successful transition. And I say that because it's very difficult to switch gears. Like, I mean, not that, it's, you know, it's a major transition from the other body of work. Aesthetically, there's a lot of linkages, but it's also very different when you say.
I think it's very different, but I think that, you know, again, you just have to, as an artist, you just have to take your time. And you know, I've been thinking about this shift for like maybe 4 years.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm always like, oh, God, I'm so bored. But when I say that, that means something is happening.
Sure. Boredom can be a very creative space.
Yeah, bored means, oh, my God, it's something's happening, whether or not I'm ready or not.
Yeah.
And it's just that, you know, it just happened gradually in very sort of in this sort of amazing sort of way. And now I'm processing this work, which is really hard right now for me.
You know, what flea markets do you go to? Is this a trade secret?
You know, what we do is, you know, me and my partner, Bob, we will just jump on a plane. We'll fly to Washington State. We will then rent a cargo van. And then we will get our little phones out and we'll just Google.
Really?
And map our way back to Chicago. So that's how we do it. We just sort of jump on a plane.
So who...
And so we don't have a list. I don't know what I'm looking for. It's just that, you know, that's
And then
the
you just kind of like dump it all in your studio and you're kind of like,
oh. Yeah. Well, there's order. There's order in my studio.
That. Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not a hoarder by no means either. you know, really, at the end of the day, what I need is really outside of my studio. So that's really, you know, like, if I need something, I just go out and get it.
Uh-huh. But you must get more than you actually use.
In terms of just the sort of everyday surplus, maybe more. But you know what? No, I don't really bring stuff in my studio that I don't want in my studio.
So you really, like, when you go to these flea markets, you really specific?
Oh, I'm, like, really, like, focused. It's a lot of work.
And how long?
It's exhausting.
I know it sounds, I don't want to belabor you at the flea market, but it's just, I'm just picturing, because you get so specific. I just know you know exactly.
I don't know, but when I see it,
you know,
like, yeah, because it has the thing has a heart. Yeah. I can, it, you know, there's a vibration there. Mm-hmm. I know. I've lost too many things along the way because I'm like, oh, it's too much money. I'll go back and get it, and then I go back and the shit's gone, and I'm just like, what is going on?
How long have you been going? And flea markets have been a big part of your process for some time.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, it's a, you know, it's undergraduate school. I can think about, like, I was flea marketing, sort of like secondhand store, kind of really into that. Uh-huh. And like there was times when I needed to pay my rent, I would just open my closet and you could just come and buy whatever you wanted.
Oh, really?
So yeah, so I was in that whole mode even then, and sort of it's always been part of the way in which I think and build. And
so maybe to go back to Ferguson, because you're from Missouri, and this is such, it's just timing too, and I know you have a show coming up in St. Louis, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you were saying to me, that's also exciting because your family is there, so they can actually come see the show. And
yeah, I'm excited.
Everyone's going to come. But it's very much just St. Louis right now. You know, it's a suburb outside of St. Louis. It's the Ferguson Michael Brown issue. But I think I read you said something like, this kind of thing's always happening. I mean, like, pick a year, it's Trayvon Martin or whatever. But
yeah, I mean, it's not like this is, you know, what do you want to know?
I don't know. I guess I just want to know if I am just really, because you just said this, like, this piece is like a big fuck you kind of piece, right? This new body of work is aggressive, and does that trigger this?
It's not that it's aggressive. It's just that, you know, it's just bringing, you know, light to a subject that I'm sort of interested in. I'm interested in, you know, race becoming this sort of transferred into sort of product. You know, this whole idea of racial consumerism and just how that, I have not yet to have that kind of conversation with a group of people.
Sure.
Of all sorts.
So this piece is called Seasick.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about these boats. You got these boats swirling around.
What do you want? You talk to me about it. What does that? What does it mean to you? What are you thinking?
Well, because first of all, we got the word sick. We got to kind of ride. You know, I'm thinking like, and it's almost dreamlike too. And you got these galleons, and they do seem to me like. And you have this story about this being a spittoon, this kind of like this body becoming. A vessel.
Mm-hmm.
This is the body is a vessel of illness or something to that effect.
Right.
But I just think of it as a very the texture of it's just so different than the playfulness of say your sound suits. It's a much more like haunting work here, wouldn't you say?
I mean, yes and no.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not like. I think I'm being really, really careful in terms of the delivery.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it's you know it's very disturbing, but yet at the same time there is this sort of very sort of reflective sort of moment within this work that I think that which opens up this sort of space to have conversation.
Yeah, and in terms of these two, these I find. A little more peculiar, a little more playful. So you got these dogs on these settees with these kind of thrones around them, kind of hearkening to your stylistic techniques of the sound suit kind of heads around these. Talk to me about that. Why the dogs? What drew you to the dogs?
Well, you know, I think again, I was, you know, I just happened to find this one dog at a flea market. You know, it was this Doberman. If you've seen the show, it's this black Doberman.
Yeah, the black Doberman.
And
I don't think we got it here.
I don't know. I was just drawn to it. And I was sort of thinking like, oh, you're my dog. You know, talking to my friend. Like, hey, you're my dog.
Uh-huh.
That kind of thing. But then I was, you know, in terms of just, you know, it from the sort of urban sort of mindset. But then I was thinking about loyalty and protection and guardian and things of this sort. And then the same day, I was like, I need to find a ghost settee.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, what? And I said, I have to find a ghost settee. He needs to set on this ghost settee.
So the dog came first.
Yeah. And so like in that day.
And then he needed a home.
In that day, I found that ghost settee that he's on right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so then I wanted to sort of then, you know, I started to think about, you know, creating this sort of otherly world, this sort of den, this space of protection. And then I started looking at dogs in the history of painting.
Sure.
And started to think about class and breed and those sort of things. So that's
Because they're kind of regal.
Or they're mutts. So,
yeah.
I mean, but, you know, it's just, you know, just the placement of that in society and, you know, the status of what and how that may sort of fit within a particular sort of culture or a group of people. So that's really sort of how this body of work sort of came about.
It's interesting because, I mean, the show opened not so long ago, so it's all still pretty fresh for you. Mm-hmm. But how was that to kind of release this new body of work into the public? Was it nerve-wracking? Is it fine? Are you processing right now?
Well, I'm processing right now, so I'm like not in such good shape. In terms of just sort of like, because you know I've been working so hard in the studio, so it's just like, ugh, it's always a bummer
when they open.
The feeling, you know, because you've been so focused and so concentrated that all of a sudden you're just kind of the rug is pulled out from under you once you deliver it, and then you're just kind of left like, ugh.
Because there is kind of a postpartum of sorts, like you just like hand it over, and then you're like, what just happened?
Yeah, so, but I'm very pleased with the work.
I think it's incredible. I think it's really evocative. And it is, And just to say, if I muddled my way through the questions, it's only because wrestling with the kind of content's it's very provocative, and it pushes a lot of different buttons than I think some of your other previous work did, which pushed different buttons, I would say. And just to say, I think it's like, and also too, I just finished working on the Kara Walker show at Domino Sugar Factory, and the questions around race and publicness are very much, I think, on America's mind in general, and clearly the conversation's muddled out there,
Yeah. Still,
sure, with stakes. You're also a teacher at the School of Art in Chicago, and you've been one for a long time. Can we also talk about how teaching plays into your role? Do you learn a lot from the students? Do you talk about these issues with them, or how does teaching inform your practice?
Oh yeah, they were. As a matter of fact, we just started a couple of weeks ago, so they were here for my opening.
Uh huh.
So instead of being in, I just emailed everyone and said, you must get a ticket to New York. And so all the grad students were here, and so we talked about the work. And it was great for them because, they're coming into a graduate program. And, it was perfect timing because, I made a shift in my work. And so, hopefully for them, you come into a grad program not with what you know but what you don't know.
Sure.
So it was really sort of perfect timing for them. But... I love teaching. I think that, I've been where they're at, and so I know what that entails. I know the struggles. I know when a revelation sort of happens. I know when, there's the pressure of trying to sort of find a language and a voice. But, it's great for me to be in that setting.
Do you workshop things with them in the classroom, or...?
Oh, yeah.
So you're like, I'm thinking about this, or...
No.
No.
Never. I never, ever, ever.
So how do you workshop things
share
with them?
Any of this with them.
You don't?
No. They know that, I will bring them to my show.
Uh-huh.
And that's basically where it stops. What I
do you say, hey, what do you think? Or are you like...
No.
I don't want to know what you think, because I got to be your teacher.
Never. It's not that I am not interested in what they think, but that's not my role, and that's not their role.
Uh-huh.
So,
it's interesting because when I saw you with the dancers, you're just a natural pedagogue. You clearly know you can get into people's heads really quickly and kind of help them out. And I know also you have a pretty large studio where you live, right? It's like above or something like that. And is that a kind of a pedagogic thing too with your crew that you work with in terms of production and stuff like that? Do you take those kind of skills of teaching them how to make and apply that to the kind of studio practice you have?
Yes and no. I mean, I really don't talk to them much about anything either. I mean, they're helping with production, but I really don't get into what's behind any of the work and what it means, and never. I don't know why. It's just that...
No, I believe
I don't really get into this with anybody, to be honest.
Yeah. But you know what you want to make, and you have to tell people how to make it.
I know what it needs to be.
And you know what it's going to look like. You feel your way towards it.
I have a sense of what it needs to be.
So interesting because are you ever surprised by this body of work when it was all laid out and you looked at it and you went,
yeah, I'm always surprised. I mean, I'm not working from sketches.
Right.
It's just, what's happening up here. I can't really, it's not something that I can sort of draw, and I'm not really interested in drawing in any way. The idea's out. I'm more interested in the process of, making it. As I'm making, I sort of, things are sort of becoming clear.
Are you, does the future hold more work? Like, what has happened? What is going down the road? Are you going to be, is this a trajectory that you'll be heading towards more? Or?
I don't know, maybe. The future is, what I think the future is, I think the future is Mass Mocha, personally. Uh-huh. That's really where I'm.
That's in.
That's where I'm at right here in my brain.
Uh-huh.
And it's
That's in...
It's massive.
When is that?
But that's, oh, God, 20...
16.
16.
Is that what it is?
I don't know.
I think so, he said that. I think it's 2 years from now.
2 years from now or a year from now or something like that.
Okay.
But we're starting in the studio. The beginning.
And that's
of
in their
year.
Big space. I used to work there.
Yeah.
I only did one show in that big space. And it's famous for not happening. Which is the Christoph Buchel. I did that. I worked on that Christoph Buchel show.
What do you mean not happening?
The show.
You mean it's a failure? Is that what you're saying?
I did a show there that actually the artist walked off after spending $550,000. And then we had to close it. And no, the public never got to see it.
Oh, my God.
I know. It's a terrible story, actually. And kind of famously terrible, though. I mean, mythically terrible.
Well, no, this will not happen.
I know that, but it's quite a beautiful. But it's an incredible space, but not small.
No.
That's a lot of flea markets.
It's not small, and we know what we're doing there.
You know.
We know.
Oh.
We've sort of given the green light. So I can just tell you one part.
Please.
So really, as you walk into the space, you will be walking into the belly of a sound suit. So that's all I can say.
Oh, that sounds nice. All right. Well, yeah. I love that. That's good. It's like a cliffhanger. So we're going to listen. Okay, we're going to break out for questions from the audience now. But this is the rule. You guys all know the rules, but they're worth stating. Questions end with question marks. All right, and they're not like giant statements. And try to keep them short so that other people have a chance. You know, just being a reasonably good citizen in a room. Okay?
Thanks, Nidu. We've got a mic set up on a stand if you'd like to step up, or I can hand you a mic. Did I see it firsthand?
Okay, I got you.
Thank both of you for the talk tonight. My question is, you spoke to kind of the transformative nature of performance and kind of transcending and transferring energy to, and I see that in your sculptural work too. How do you think that that plays out in a published volume?
Oh, in the book.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's, you know, working with the designer of the book, who's my partner actually, you know, I think, you know, the book is sort of designed also, I think it's choreographed in a sense. I think there's a particular sort of rhythm flow in how the book is sort of put together, the placement of the essays and things like that. So I think that's, it's important that as you sort of move through the book that there is this sort of sense of rhythm and sort of experience. And this sort of voyeuristic sort of sensibility in that. So, it, you know, it's in every aspect of my life. You know, it's not, you know, I think art design just sort of is how I sort of exist and live in the world.
To clarify my question,
no, because I wouldn't put it in the format if I did. Believe me.
I have a question. I saw the show at Jack Shaman, and I wanted to know what, if any, were your comments or what kind of conversation were you trying to spark with on Black spirituality or Afro-spiritual histories with using the language of sacrifice or resurrection and all the, you know, the different titles of the different pieces, and also with the... I guess with the white paper, reading, what's his name's? Rereading
Gates.
His essays, yes, Gates. Mm-hmm. Reading Gates and Skip's essays on the black caricatures. I was wondering, what's that conversation? I wanted you to kind of go back and talk about this shift in your work a little bit more. Yeah.
Well, I think that spirituality in the exhibition, it's not that if that's what you got from me, great. It's not what I am sort of, you know, it's sort of... You know, I'm just trying to find a way within that exhibition to sort of help us sort of come together and have this sort of conversation. It's not that I'm angry.
Yeah.
it's really about, and I think even with these objects, it's you know, I'm sort of, a lot of the work, there's this sort of sense of offering. There's this sort of sense of me giving an opportunity over to you to sort of engage in a conversation with me. So I think that the way in which the work is designed and the way in which the show is set up, it's really about this kind of movement. And what was the... Well, you know, the fact that, you know, these things are still in our presence. They're still in our existence. And, you know, when you think about it, or when I think about it, it's, you know, we're still sort of, you know, it's still very difficult that as I'm out sort of, you know, gathering sort of resources, that, you know, I'm still confronted. There's still this body of signifiers that are out there that sort of portray a particular sort of image on my people. And, you know, it was just sort of time for me to sort of bring light to that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we've got interesting programming around this exhibition that also is interesting. We've got... You know, I'm interested in, again, just sort of this conversation being sort of built, and that we all are having it together, and that, you know, the takeaway white paper is really, again, how can I sort of allow, you know, this to get outside of the gallery and still sort of live and exist, and still sort of this sort of notion of, again, I think it comes down to sort of, you know, what role do I have and play within sort of being sort of proactive and making a difference, and you know, what is my sort of humanitarian sort of discourse in terms of how I sort of participate in this work.
We had a question up here too, just so, okay.
Oh, I think you've answered my question partially, but it was in relation to the show at Jack Shaneman. There's this explanatory text on all the walls with the pieces, which gives a background to like the forms and sort of like their history. And I'm just curious, how is that integral to the pieces themselves? Because I mean, like in what I'm seeing here, where there's no that's not really brought up. So I'm just curious how that would relate to the piece, or is it just for the show?
Well, that was actually just for the show, and that also speaks about where it was located, you know, where it was found, and so we really wanted to sort of create this sort of data of where it was found within the country and provide that as, and what it was labeled, because a lot of things in the show are not what they actually are. You know, I think next Friday we have a art historian that's a part of the Roadshow, Antique Roadshow, coming in to talk about these artifacts and put them in context. So, you know, again, just how things are labeled and how we're perceived to receive this information. And we'll get to you.
Sorry.
For sure.
You sort of spoke a little bit about your role in education, but I wanted to know if you could talk a little bit about traversing those two environments a little bit, not just academia and fine art, but also maybe a little bit of like design in academia and fine art?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm interested, you know, for me, they all just sort of move parallel to one another. I don't know if I really sort of talk about any of them at the end of the day. In the classroom, it's more like, you know, what I'm more or less sort of approach things from whether or not you know, it really sort of comes out of this sort of conviction. That's really how I sort of come about it. May it sort of fit within design, art, fashion, what have you. It's you know, if that's there, then I think it has some meat to it. So, you know, I had the Fashion, Body, and Garment graduate program at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, but,
you know, I tell them never to look at fashion.
Uh-huh.
Never.
What should they look at?
Everything else.
Uh-huh.
Because you know what? Looking at fashion, it's already done. It's there. It's, yeah. You know, I really feel that they have to sort of, you know, the research really comes from a different place. So.
With the performance piece, did you collaborate with a composer as well as the choreographer?
Yeah, actually we did.
And was it mostly your input as to what you wanted from the piece?
Well, we sort of gave them a little bit of sort of a overview of what we were thinking, but really wanted them to sort of develop the score for the piece. Again, so it was you know, again, a work in progress. We all sort of came together and was actually building the piece as it was being developed. So sometimes, you know, when I'm doing that kind of work is, you know, I know enough about dance and I know enough about working with musicians that, you know, it's safe to come into that kind of space and pull something together. If I didn't feel that it was safe or that I understood it, we would never take that approach. But it's really just sort of, again, the more you do it, the more you sort of kind of know how things can evolve and build. And the performance got better each time. So it was because not only am I thinking about it, watching as it sort of reshapes itself, but the performers are also really sort of making sort of associations with their character and sort of how do they sort of come as a partner and sort of, again, feeding off the audience and what they provide. So everybody becomes part of developing the piece.
You know, it's funny because, just to say real quick, sometimes with your work I think, like, oh my gosh, this artist is so OCD, right? Like, just so in the details. But you really actually wonderfully collaborative, too. You give people a lot of freedom to kind of improvise and do their own thing. Some artists cannot handle that lack of control. But you
and I think, again, it goes back down to, you know, I'm more interested in that, you know, conviction that I can sort of like, that I am completely transformed based on your commitment to the experience.
I know you've been talking a lot about performance, the energy that surrounds your pieces in performance. I don't know if a lot of people here, like me, I've only been able to see your work static in the gallery. I was wondering if you had any opinions on how your pieces are received when they're not in performance, and if that impacts the public's reception, especially in light of, I know last week there was an article in the Times about how icy and elite New York galleries tend to, that environment tends to be for people who aren't looking to buy necessarily, but looking to experience contemporary art.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I think about any of it. I just can't, you know, I just can't get caught up. I could, but I don't. So when I sort of hand it over, there you have, there it is. So I'm not, that's why I was like with him up here on the stage with NATO, and I was sort of like, okay, what are you asking me?
Yeah, yeah.
About this work, I mean. I'm not really willing to really give a lot either because, you know, it's, I don't know, I'm just a messenger at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Artist second, so.
So, you know, just to say, you don't worry about if, like, some, Jack Shaman's a great gallery, so it's all good, but I was just thinking, like, you don't mind if it's, like, some cold gallerista moment where, like, everyone's, like, comes in and it's, like, everyone's all weirded out and they see your pieces, you don't mind that?
No. I mean, what control?
I know you don't.
No, not really.
But it's a very different environment than, say, Grand Central, right?
Is it?
To go to your point, Yes, it, surely it is.
Okay. I don't know if I see them, it's two different locations, but I don't know if the experience is any different.
Yeah. But certainly also seeing him static versus seeing him moving is very different.
It is, but it all depends on what your head is.
Yeah.
When it's static, I go into this dream state of imagining what it looks like moving.
Yeah, totally.
So it's not that it can be static, but I am completely consumed by this sort of ideal of this thing sort of existing and being alive in space.
Well, you know, at Grand Central, it becomes more of a serendipitous experience because it's totally unexpected, whereas if you plan to go to the gallery, you sort of know that you're going to be at some point mesmerized. Nick?
Or not.
Well, in your case,
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, the entire New York City is in love with your work. We love you, and thank you so much for coming to do this tonight. It is now time to move on to book signing. And next time you're going to be here at New York Public Library, we're going to do a huge performance.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.